Welcome, everybody. I want to make sure you can hear me.
Coming through great, Kimberly.
Okay, great. Hi, everybody. Welcome to our second live event. Hold on, I'm not able to navigate here for some reason. So you have to give me 1 second. here we go. Okay, thank you. Welcome, everybody. The way that we are going to lay out today's event is that I'm going to do a brief introduction about kind of just a real overview of what we're going to be covering, and also just briefly about some of the innovations to give you a picture of that. And then we're going to open up the whole time to be live interacting with you. There are all kinds of things that Foster and other team members will be wanting to address, including, you know, the specifics of some of the devices that we can reveal and more about open source and all of that. We're just imagining that we can do that in the course of interacting live with you so that we can really get a better feel this time for all of you out there, and you can all get a feel for each other. So I invite you to submit your questions into the Q&A section anytime while I'm talking, because as soon as I'm done, we're going to open it right up to be interacting with you. If you have any technical issues, then please enter those into the chat window, not the Q&A, but into the chat section, and address them to Mitch, and he'll do his very best to get you on board with whatever the issue is. And I wanted also just to say that we're all being recorded. So if you speak, you're agreeing to that, so that we can have it in the archive and anywhere else we want to use it. Okay, so as we've mentioned, since Thrive came out 3 years ago, we've heard from over 500 different innovators, both in terms of devices, free energy devices, health, water purification, decontamination, and agriculture technologies, and in addition, pioneering projects in education, justice, media, environment, all the sectors. And I just want to take a moment to acknowledge the commitment and the vision that each one of these breakthrough innovations represents. You know, in this, often overwhelming time when there are so many who lack access to clean drinking water and sufficient food and energy, the global population is growing by 80 million people a year. So by 2030, it means we're going to have 9 billion people, which puts the pressure of 30% more water, 40% more energy, 50% more food. You know, you combine that with our growing police state and the consolidation of power around the world, and it's a serious and precarious moment in human history. Hey, whoever's typing, can you mute yourself? Anyway. What these breakthrough innovators represent is that they have decided to step into this precarious and exciting moment in our human evolution and add their creativity and their expertise to coming up with really transformative solutions for all of us. So it's an entirely uplifting, inspiring, and empowering world that we're entering into with these breakthrough innovations, and I am deeply grateful to all of them. That said, getting from proof of concept of something that can really help to transform the world to having that project disseminated throughout the world takes a lot. And one of the things, as we started to hear from everybody, we realized, you know, it's not just the money, which is a huge part of what they need, but there's also vetting, you know, do they have what they think they have? How does it, you know, what's our assessment, an expert assessment of the technology? Where are they at in terms of security? Because as we'll get into, I'm sure, in the course of the event today, that, you know, suppression is a real phenomenon that we need to deal with. So are they out with security management? You know, sometimes you'll have a lone inventor who's going to have to ramp up and work with a whole team. Is the person equipped to do that? What kind of legal assistance do they need with regard to intellectual property and contracts? And then there's the manufacturing and the distribution and the role of 3D printing. I mean, it's a huge array of things involved in getting a bold new innovation out into the world. So what we did was we created what we called Thrive Connect. And we said, okay, let's convene a team of experts in every one of these fields. So scientists who are, you know, traditionally educated, but still open-minded enough to be able to recognize new paradigm technologies, and security experts and legal experts. And we created this vetting team, and we developed a super encrypted database and came up with various scenarios of different kinds of structures and kinds of financing and fulfillment scenarios. And then we created surveys. Sometimes we heard from people saying, you know, I have money I want to put into free energy. It's like, okay, how much money do you have? What kind of technology is most interesting to you? And then we created surveys also for the innovators in all the fields, in the social fields as well as in the technologies. And we asked them to assess their state of what we call thrivability. You know, what's the status of their technology or their innovation? Where are they at with funding? How's their decision making and conflict resolution and, you know, getting along as an organization? And then also to assess what it is that they need. And so through this Thrive Connect process, we were able to get down to identifying 70, which out of the 500, we chose 70 of the top most transformative people and projects in all the sectors, you know, most in the technology, but not only. It really represented the full array. I'm sure we'll talk later about the criteria and all of that. But just to keep this at an overview level, one of the things you should know is that every project that we chose is scalable, so that it may be look like it's on a local level, but it's able to be global. So of these, you know, free energy is in many ways the most exciting. It has such tremendous ramifications in the whole geopolitical shift in power. But it's really the synergy that gives power to the possibility of true transformation, because, you know, free energy represents a new paradigm, as we'll show. If the universe were not alive and abundant, it wouldn't work. And that same reality of an alive, abundant universe is intrinsic to the other innovations as well. So with new education and new media and clean water and the new technologies for electricity, they all reinforce each other with this new paradigm. And it's really an exciting moment in time. Okay, so I'm going to just quickly go through a few things on a broad level. Especially for those who aren't so scientifically oriented as I wasn't when I first got exposed to this, and just to kind of help what helped me to understand it. The first thing I'll describe is something, it's not secret, you can check it out. It's called PAC Scientific, and it's a water purification system. And a guy named Jay Harman developed it. And Foster, maybe you can put a picture on the screen of the pump. It's a nautilus-shaped five-spiral pump. And what it does is, with the same amount of energy as it takes to, you know, put on a light bulb, one light bulb, it works with stagnant water containers. So, you know, throughout the world, municipalities are all kind of, communities everywhere are holding storage tanks of water. And what happens traditionally when water is stored is that it stays at different temperatures. And that's what has the algae and the bacteria grow. So this five-spiral-shaped pump that they invented creates a toroidal energy flow within the water. And the water flows, the temperature equalizes. And so rather than needing to add a bunch of chemicals, which is what's currently done in these stagnant storage water tanks, instead, this toroidal water flow allows the water to move in a way that no chemicals are needed. So with a very simple geometry of the Phi spiral, you're able to create the toroidal field. And the reason I wanted to show this one first is because it's a, creating that torus and mimicking the toroidal field is relevant in all of the technologies for this electricity that we've personally seen. And I can say the same thing, which helps kind of get the principle across, is that the same Phi pump is used now sometimes giving blood transfusions. And because blood moves in our bodies toroidally, everything is moving toroidally, when you can add the new blood into the system already with that spin to it, you know, it doesn't burn, it goes in faster, and that kind of thing shows what it is to blend. And the blending is what's really key here in all of these new technologies. So when the pictures that we put up go away, if you want to go back to full screen, just remember to hit the little Three Amigos button on your WebEx screen. Okay, so we have personally seen several free energy technologies that run themselves. That means they're over unity and they put out more energy than it takes to get them going. And each one of these, as I said, mimics the toroidal dynamic in some way to create what's called a resistance-less flow. So there's no friction. And one of the ways that you can see this is that the electricity from these devices runs cold. So normally, you know, electricity is hot, and it's significant for lots of reasons. One is that traditionally, in order to get electricity to flow without that friction, people have had to use liquid helium and liquid nitrogen to create super cold environments. That's called superconductivity, and kind of the holy grail of interface between scientific theory and modern technology is what's called room temperature superconductivity, which is just, can you, without the expense and impracticality of, you know, making everything cold with these liquid nitrogens and stuff, can you create a resistance-less flow, a frictionless flow at anywhere, anytime at room temperature? And that's one of the things that these devices have been able to accomplish. Another feature of them, just so you kind of get the overarching principle, is that they're what's called load following. So normally, if in your house you had 10 people, you know, plug in hair dryers, you'd probably blow a circuit because there's a finite amount that can come through, and when you tap that, it blows your circuit breaker. In a load following device, what's happening is that because of mimicking the way the energy of the universe is already working toroidally, the devices are accessing the plenum of infinite energy, which means that if you plugged in 10 hair dryers, and I've seen this, then simply more energy comes through. You unplug the hair dryers, less energy comes through. It's all based on need as it's done. And I'm going to say just for a second, it was a very touching and profound moment for me spiritually to actually witness that the first time, because as much as I have spiritually experienced myself as part of an infinite alive universe, to have it demonstrated in technology is profound, because it wouldn't work if there weren't this infinite alive universe to be plugging into. And to see that operating is profound, and I believe that that new paradigm is a significant part of what can change as these new technologies come out, and what is so threatening to the old paradigm to actually realize that there is, in fact, enough for everybody. We can thrive. So one other thing I want to mention, because I think this will inform some of our conversation as we get going, is Some of the big issues have to do with the interface of this abundant energy, clean, frictionless energy, coming into our current existing grid. So, you know, how do you take the energy from these devices and make it so when you're plugging into something in your house, it's tapping into that energy? Now, so the interface is critical, and it's a huge part of where people are working, is actually interfacing the device with current grid systems. So, you know, Pacific Gas and Electric here has a very front-loaded investment into their grid. And they're going to put up a lot more resistance to technologies that don't use that interface. And it's going to mean a significant amount of restructuring for all of us who are have our outlets in our houses. So it may be that we end up, there's going to be lots of models, and we'll discuss all of those. But it may be that one is to interface with the existing grid while these individual devices are also disseminated independently. We'll see. Anyway, one point I thought of to make here is just that, you know, again, the Taurus and this toroidal field, that's why we emphasize that so much in the movie, is that it really does seem to hold a key to our freedom on so many levels. And I believe that's, you know, possibly why the crop circles are showing that so many of them depict these patterns of the Taurus. Okay, so in a health innovation that we can talk more about later. If you're interested, just ask whatever questions you want. But in the health, there's a molecular delivery system that's been designed, and it delivers nutrients into cells at unprecedented rates with unprecedented absorption. So a lot has to do with this whole ability to interface. Anyway, this particular breakthrough has the capacity to restore immune systems completely and quickly, so that it's especially been in their trials related to healing MS and cancer in profound ways. So that's one that made it into our top 70. Another is an agricultural. There's lots of agricultural innovations. And, you know, with those, it's really a nexus of food, energy, water, and climate. So there's one that has developed strains and systems with no GMOs, no artificial fertilizers, and no pesticides that can grow food 200% faster in any climate. And, you know, that's obviously significant when we're talking about how many people there are on the planet and any unpredictability in the climate, or doing it indoors, outdoors, however it is. These folks have developed a really unusual interface between aquaponics, hydroponics, new lighting, and they've been working on an interface with all kinds of different sources of electricity. So that, again, this is one of the projects working on interface. The education, we have seen so many exciting innovations using open source learning and collaboration systems and gamification, and we've actually decided we're going to do a whole one of our Thrive Together events on education, because it's so significant and it's so vast what's happening with the transformation. And then just a few more. I just want to round out so you see that it's, you know, the technology is a part of it, but it's within a context that there are people everywhere working on these brilliant solutions, so that in the face of all that we're challenged by, there are folks bringing their own unique purpose and gifts. You know, one is Sasha Stone, who's developed an alternative community model called New Earth Nation. And it's based on non-violation and personal sovereignty as its operating principle. You know, sovereign people, sovereign land, natural law. And how each group chooses to cooperate and interact with each other is at the sole discretion of that group. So it really allows for tremendous diversity and creativity. And the templates and blueprints and confirmed sites here are in Costa Rica, Chile, India, Australia, New Zealand, Mexico, America, Greece. I mean, these are getting, they're poised to be happening all over the world. And I think that they create just a, you know, they operate with a new paradigm for people. And I think that's the thing that is so significant here. So two more. One, I want to say that, you know, in this moving of vast resources that it's going to take to empower all of these innovations and the wraparound services that we've described, we've identified that we feel are needed for them to actually get out to the world. There are a lot of old dynamics that need to be healed and transformed, and those have to do with race, class, power, and gender dynamics. You know, if you come in with a lot of money, there's just traditionally bad ways of doing that, that disempower the people with the innovations. And, you know, how can we have accountability and responsible interactions without those same power dynamics is something that we're really interested in exploring and healing the community too. So we will be engaged in having those, that work be a part of all of our teams so that we don't fall prey to any of the old dynamics that just do so much harm in an old model of philanthropy. And then the last one I want to mention is some of you may remember Akilah Shirills from our film, the one who helped to broker the truce between Crips and Bloods, the gangs in Watts. And he and Orlin Bishop and Rain Treadway and others have organized something, created something, envisioned something called the Reverence Wellness Salon in Watts. And one of the things about Watts is that it is a model ghetto. What happens in Watts happens in other ghettos. It just happens in Watts first. So that's the good and the bad of it. And it means that the opportunity for healing and innovation in Watts can also spread throughout the world. And they've designed this. So the other part is that in the ghettos, there's so much post-traumatic stress and hypervigilance from those who have been living with years of urban gang wars and abuse and poverty. And so they've designed this quantum healing theory environment where employing all of the, you know, innovations that we're talking about and more from within their own communities to have a wellness, reverence wellness salon that engages people in mental health services and spiritual healing practices and employs the new paradigm technologies and everything else to really create a vision and a reality of something different in the middle of Watts. And that's something that we really are excited about and hope to be able to empower as part of the project. And I think we are going to get Akilah to join us from a plane trip he's currently on. And I don't know if he was able to call in. That's what we were trying for. Test our technology in a big way here, but just to be able to describe this quickly. And if he's here, he will. And otherwise, we're just going to open this right up to our questions and answers with you all so that we can engage the conversation and get specific. I just would hope that that gave you a bit of an overview in the whole notion of where the Taurus and the blend and lead and the synergy of these different innovations comes together. So thanks. All right, I'm going to go to Q&A. Let's see.
Let's first of all check and see. Goa, do you know if Akilah was able to join us from his flight?
You know, unfortunately, I don't see Akilah in the login list yet. So okay. I've been looking for him, but I'll let you know when he drops in if he does.
Okay, great. Let me just add one note. Thank you, Kimberly, for that wonderful overview of the breakthrough innovations that we're seeing. This is one of our very favorite topics to discuss, and we could go on for days. But I want to just add one note before we open up to the question, which is we could spend forever on the details of any particular technology or project or innovation. But our overview is that in all of these different topics, we're really trying to hone our own critical thinking and encourage other people to get more and more skilled at critical thinking as well. And one of the things that we're seeing is at the core of all of our problems in our predicament is the breakdown of the wholeness of natural systems. And therefore, at the core of the solutions to all of these hundreds of issues, which are coming down on us every day, is the recognition and then restoration of the wholeness of those natural systems, whether it's how we access energy, how we allow a natural economy to occur instead of trying to centralize control over it, whether or not we have an honest, open, you know, toroidal feedback system, a feedback communication system in our media, or whether it's a top-down pyramid where it's being controlled and manipulated and so forth. The key that binds together all of the, you know, over 1,000 solutions groups in our network is that they're all working on recognizing and restoring the wholeness of natural systems. So I just wanted to shine a light on that thread. So as we're talking about various technologies and projects and so forth, I want to keep looking through that lens so we can recognize that there's actually relatively simple principles that are cohering them all. So we've got a number of questions that have been sent in by people ahead of time, but let's just open it up and start and get interacting with all of you. So Rob, do you have some questions from the chat room you want us to start with here?
Sure.
Great.
I think John William Cornett has some interesting comments here, if you'd like to bring him up.
Okay, great.
Okay, John, I've unmuted you. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Yes, I'm here.
Can you make your video, show yourself on video, too?
Would you like to, would you like to be on video?
Let me see. Where's the button?
Hold on a second. Let me get that going for you. Hold on a minute.
I'm sorry.
No problem.
We're all getting used to this new technology. It's fantastic in its ability to connect us. It's also a little complex to learn.
Yeah, a little proprietary. It's okay. It's really cool. I'm digging it totally. I just wanted to, I don't know if everybody can hear me. I just wanted to, I'm sorry I can't find the button to bring up the visual. I'm not worried about that. I just want to let everybody know that there are some greatly courageous individuals out there who are still shining through all this darkness. One of them in particular is John Searle, who has had quite a lengthy, as a lot of people know, a lengthy ordeal trying to find people with integrity who do not intend to co-opt his technology. It's there. It's being developed in San Diego, but it requires our input because it's for us. It's not intended to go to a corporation that will commoditize it and try to figure out a way to stick a meter on it. It's for us to develop, and we will benefit from it. Each of us, with those who participate, will not only realize an SEG for themselves, but also be able to participate in this greater shift. I know there's a lot of quantum energy generators that are coming, that are being bared upon the public at this time, but John Searle, I think, deserves special attention. Just, he's an old man, and his heart is in the right place. You know, and he's a genius, and he will not be co-opted for people trying to rush his product to the market. And there are people who are trying to rush his product to the market. Do I still have you guys here?
Yes.
Yeah, you do. And this is great. Maybe we can drop a link to John Searle into the chat room for other people, or at least encourage you to follow up, because he's a really interesting person to learn about his history.
Yes, ma'am.
And very credible. So if you have something you can drop into the chat window to make available for people to follow up on that, he's one of many. That would be great. Thank you so much.
And also there's a fantastic video that Bradley Lockerman made a documentary about Searle's life.
I brought all that to bear on the team. I found Kevin Ballmer. I did the music. We did
that
for John because he had people surrounding him that were just incompetent. And so a few of us just got together and just started helping him. That we're continuing. And I don't have money, but I do have the willingness to help this man. And I'm going to do it no matter what. And we're going to do it. So I just want you guys to know that John Searle is alive and well. He's thriving.
Great. Well, for anybody who doesn't know about John Searle, he's in his 80s now, and probably 40 or 50 years ago, he had free energy running his house and he had an anti-gravity device that he was flying around the country with remote control. And all of this is in the documentary. Yes. And of course, when they found out about it, the powers that be came in and arrested him for being off the grid. And then he was threatened, and his developments kind of had to go underground. And now they're coming out again.
Yes.
And he is a fantastic human being. Kimberly and I were blessed to have the opportunity to connect with him recently on Skype and just to discuss some of these things. And I do believe that this project really has it all ready to go, except the money to complete the development and to kind of secure the rest of John's life so that he can coach people in completing the redevelopment of this technology. And they're definitely one of our projects in Thrive Connect that we're looking to get major funding to as soon as possible.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I saw somebody wanted to know, and just for those following up, Searle is S-E-A-R-L. So that's how you spell his name, to look him up. And there are films about him and everything. I really encourage that. I see a question from Charles Bensinger. And also I noticed some people are raising their hands. If you can submit what your question is, that helps us to be able to know so we can guide this conversation a little bit. So if you have something in addition to raising your hand, if you could ask the question, that's great. So Charles Bensinger, can you?
Go ahead, Charles, I've unmuted you. Would you like to be on video or just audio today?
Audio is fine.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious about learning a little bit more about some of the other prospective, let's say, shovel-ready free energy technologies you've investigated. Can we look forward to something coming out in the next year or two, and assuming some funding could be found?
I'm very confident about at least within the next 5 years, if not, and potentially within the next 2 years. And as Kimberly said, we're looking at projects in all different sectors, but in the energy sector, which really comes under infrastructure for us, we've been looking at generators that depend on cavitation, fusion, geomagnetic, hydrogen, resonance, solid state, toroidal vortex coil technologies, turbine technologies, battery storage technologies. We've seen one that I can't say a lot about, but it with a very inexpensive and small arrangement of coils in a particular insightful geometry, it boils water in about 8 seconds. Now, boiling water may not seem like a lot to people, but that's what nuclear power plants do, is all of that danger, all that radiation is concentrated just to boil water to create steam to turn into electricity. And the same thing is true for coal-fired power plants. So if we can inexpensively and safely boil water in a matter of seconds, then that's obviously a total game-changing breakthrough. And that, you know, that's one of numerous ones that we've been seeing. There's another one in a foreign country where this person is supposedly running his house off this technology. It's a suitcase size a generator with that involves magnets, somewhat like a Bedini type of engine. And we've been suggesting to him, he's been wondering whether to go for patents. I've recommended to him that he certainly not go for patents based on the full disclosure of the technology, because that's one of the many ways that the technology gets suppressed. And what we've been suggesting to him is that he, first of all, we haven't been down to vet this lab in this country where they are. Assuming that it checks out, we're recommending that he open source it. And what I mean by that is that he actually give it away on the internet, but in exchange for the right amount of compensation, where he would feel like he had been justly rewarded for his brilliance, for his hard work over many years, and for his willingness to take a very dangerous risk to create this for people and then to get it out. So that's one example on one end of the spectrum of potential business plans that we're recommending to people. And, you know, we'll see. There's lots of different types of plans, and we can discuss this shortly. I'll show you kind of a slide that shows the spectrum of various plans that we're seeing and that we recommend. There's no one plan for everyone, whether it's open source on one end or, you know, conscious venture capital on the other extreme. Each project and each person will need a different fit for their plan. But an open idea, an open-minded approach to how to get these technologies out and collaboration amongst different projects is making the chances of this getting out safely and globally higher and higher every day.
Just a quick thing here. I work at a place called the Global Water Center in Milwaukee, and I see people every week coming in from Africa, and they don't have any way to boil water over there. They have to import propane tanks on the size of bicycles and donkeys, and yes, they need to be able to boil water to have clean water to drink and also to for canning purposes. So any kind of a device that would enable people in third world countries to boil water would be a huge quality of life enhancer. And of course, we have the water purification problem. 5,000 people a day die from waterborne illnesses. And that's about energy, too. We need energy to clean water. We need energy to provide the basics for a lot of folks out there, billions of people. So if we could, and there are organizations that would bring money forward if they knew such technologies existed.
Yes. Well, let me echo a little bit what Kimberly mentioned earlier, because it's very interesting, the intersection of energy devices with water purification devices, because we visited one lab that has two different technologies, one for water purification and one a self-running energy access device. And they're made out of different materials. One of them is plastic, and the other is a combination of specific minerals, metals. But the idea is the same behind both of them. And it's simply through creating the right geometry and then rotating it, and then passing either just air, you know, the quantum flux of energy that's in the space surrounding us through the metal device, or simply running water through the plastic device. The one of them purifies the water just with flow geometries itself, with no chemicals, without a lot of energy needed. And the other is the same idea, but with the metals, rotating at particular frequencies and so forth, it accesses the power of what's traditionally called the vacuum. We much prefer to call it the plenum because it's not empty. It's full of basically infinite energy at every point. But we've been validated in what we said in the movie over and over again, that each of these technologies in one way or another has come across the fundamental pattern, and they're mimicking it in some way that then accesses the field that we live in. This field of infinite energy flows in toroidal dynamics that then create toroidal sort of field geometries. So it's talk about, you know, the simplicity of the principle, the guiding principles here of critical thinking, the fundamental pattern that we describe in Thrive, we are seeing validated in every single one of these technologies.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Okay, let's bring in another question.
Thank you.
How about Joyce Anastasia? You bring her up.
Hi, Joyce. You're unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Hi. Would you like to be on video?
It doesn't matter. Whatever works well for you.
Yeah, try and click on your video icon and see if you can show up.
It should be right next to your name in the panelist list.
Anyway, you can go ahead and ask your question, and maybe you can do that.
If for some reason, it's not pulling out. Okay. I wanted to ask, but first of all, I really appreciate being on this Thrive Connect. It's just amazing. I loved hearing the other people speak about what's going on and the support of, especially of Sarah. That was really beautiful. So my question is, how will these naturally non-disclosed innovations be interfaced into the public? I'm thinking about divine timing relative to the chicken or the egg. in relation to sharing what most importantly needs to be brought forward, supporting the progress of these innovations and inventions, as well as their use.
So the question is fundamentally, what about the timing aspect?
The timing as it's brought out into the public so people are actually able to use these devices and innovations.
Yeah. Well, it's a really important question with many different facets to it. We've run across some people who say, well, you know, we can't bring free energy technologies out until humanity is enlightened because it won't be safe, or we'll just have so much energy, we'll consume ourselves to death or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't happen to agree with that. I think we're already in the presence of nuclear technologies and fossil fuel technologies, which are polluting our environment and, you know, risking global holocaust. So all the technologies that we've been looking at are way safer than either of those. So in terms of the safety of bringing it forward, I think that the time is now. In terms of people, you know, consuming, most of the people I know who have sufficient resources, they get pretty bored pretty quickly of just consuming, and they're going about trying to fix the world for their grandchildren. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot more confidence in humanity than that also. And anybody who was, you know, violating other people with either their production or their consumption, you know, in the world we're moving into, would be prosecuted and halted from doing that. So I think that humanity is ready now. And I think that the main factors are, number one, money, and number two, security. Because I just know far too many inventors. You know, some people think that this raiding of labs is some conspiracy theory, you know, it's some hoax or something like that. Well, you can look it up on the internet and read some of the individual stories, but I'm intimately familiar with the stories of Tesla, of Sweet, of Inomata, and Keeley, and Farnsworth, and Trombley, and Searle was mentioned before, Paul Pantone, and Eric Dollard, Tiwari, De Palma, Max Langenberg, and the list goes on. And these stories are very real of the suppressions and the threats. And in one case, the case of Eugene Maloff that we mentioned in the film, where he was actually killed the day before he was going on coast to coast to talk about some of the breakthroughs in cold fusion. So it's very real. And I believe the main thing that's slowing things down is the security of the inventors. But that security needs money, because most inventors have been so focused on developing their technologies, they don't have a lot of knowledge, usually, in my experience, in terms of security, in terms of legal protection, in terms of win-win business plans and contracts and marketing and sales and distribution, all that goes into actually getting a technology safely out. So I'm excited by the interest that we're getting from potential investors and philanthropists in Thrive Connect, because a lot of these people have found that they haven't been having much impact on a world that's on the verge of self-destruction, no matter how much money they've got. So a lot of these wealthy people are really looking very earnestly now for what are the products, what are the projects, what are the innovations that will actually turn this thing around as quickly as possible. And that's not just one product, because they're synergetic with each other, as Kimberly mentioned before. You know, if you've got the health projects coming out and we're exposing the banking schemes and providing alternative ways of structuring economies and currencies and so forth, at the same time that you've got the new energy projects coming out, these and many more all synergize with each other because they're all aligned with the natural flow of energy in the universe. So I do believe that I'm encouraged by what we're seeing in relation to Thrive Connect, but I also know that there's a lot of other all over the world, many of whom we're in touch with, and what we're mass is being reached. where the funding is either coming in or imminent in many of these projects, and the knowledge and the collaboration about how to protect the inventors, how to help them get the business end of it organized, get the manufacturing done in safe places and so forth. Somebody asked me recently, well, when do you think we'll actually see free energy out on the market? And you know, I can't give a definite answer, of course, to that. But my answer to them was, I think we'll see 200 companies selling these types of products within the next 5 years, and it'll be all over the world.
I want to add one thing about the suppression, because when I first got exposed to this, the place that I learned first about the suppression had to do with the health technologies. And I just rewatched a documentary on Brzezinski. I think we have a link we can put at least to his website. And it was a film made in 2010 about him anyway that really chronicles how it works. And I think it's very important, because one of the things that's kind of, it was hard for me originally to wrap around, you know, when we see the need, how can this not be out there? You know, and in the health situation, you understand the, you know, trillion, multi-trillion dollar industry of sickness and the corruption of that to actual healing. And the same thing happens with the energy. So I think it's interesting. And I think it might be fun to talk about some of the different ways to get these technologies out, because it does represent a big disruption in the field, of course. And there are different ones at different states. Some people are asking about, you know, what's the state of Nissim's and what's the state of some others. It might be good to show some of the devices, like how they, the specifics, if you can, Foster, and also maybe some of the different ideas. Like, I'm fascinated by open source, and that doesn't mean, like Foster said, it doesn't mean you get to impose that everybody who's got an invention goes open source with it. That's what I would like, but there are different models. So it might be fun to talk about that. And we have several teammates from Thrive here who know about 3D printing and open source and different things and how that can be used.
Yeah, let me mention a couple of things in transition to that. First of all, in response to somebody's asking about Nassim Haramein being in Thrive and what's the status of his work on energy. We're in continual contact with Nassim. I actually worked with him in California for about 5 years. So I saw and was involved in a lot of his early, not only research, but his technological developments. And I am under non-disclosure with him, so I can't reveal any specifics. But I can tell you it was very exciting even back then. And he's updated me somewhat on what's going on in his current lab. And all I can say publicly is that he's making tremendously exciting progress, and he has obviously a very deep understanding of how energy works. Secondly, I put in the chat window a list of links that I find particularly useful in relation to suppression. So if you want to see what's going on or has been going on in relation to the suppression of new energy technologies, there are some links there that, one, just tell you a lot of the stories, but also that tell you a lot about how the U.S. Patent Office works. And there has been through Freedom of Information Act, there's been a disclosure just in the last few weeks.
But we have a poll on this, I thought.
Oh, that's right.
We were thinking of doing a poll.
Okay, well, maybe we ought to do that before I describe that technology. I mean, describe that article.
And before you read it, don't open it in the chat window yet.
So, Goa, you want to bring that one up?
Sure. So I just launched the poll. That should have opened up into a window for you. And if people want to submit their, you know, choose the response and then click on the submit button. And then we'll reveal the results.
So the poll asks you, how many new energy technologies have been shut down by the U.S. Patent Office? And the multiple choice is 0 to 100, 100 to 500, 500 to 2,500, 2,500 to 5,000, or more than 5,000. So click on the one that you would guess, And then click submit down in the lower right, and we'll see what kind of feedback we get.
We can just sit for a minute, it's fine.
Looks like almost everyone is submitted. We've got about 20% that haven't started yet.
Let's. What's it look like?
Should we close it?
Sure.
Okay. Close the poll and I'll show the results. So we have a pretty smart crowd, actually.
Informed. They're all smart. It's better being informed here.
Yeah. Yes. Well, as you probably saw, if you've seen Stephen Greer's movie Sirius, as of 2010, the Federation of American Scientists issued a report stating that over 5,100 patents had been seized. And this new article that I was starting to tell you about has revealed a secret program within the U.S. Patent Office. They call it the Sensitive Application Warning System, or SAWS. And that has now been exposed. And basically, anytime one of these technologies or anything close to it is submitted for a patent, it goes into a special category where instead of one reviewer, 3 to 9 people will review it, and it can be delayed for years. And then basically what's been happening to date is the person who has submitted the patent will be issued a gag order. And I'm going to go in and go back to the slides for a minute, and I'll show you a copy just because, again, it sounds like some wacky conspiracy theory to people who haven't seen it. But this is some of the text of Secrecy Order Title 35, you know, sections 181 to 188. And that should be on your screen now. And if you look in the second paragraph of that.
Not yet, Foster.
It's not on yet?
It's not coming through. And I also did drop the link to that article from Serious Disclosure into the chat window.
Okay.
And then I have some people to call on here too.
Well, for some reason, seems. Okay, let's try one more time here and see if it's showing for you now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So
it just went away. There it is.
All right, here we go. So look in the second paragraph that says, you are hereby notified that your application, as above identified, has been found to contain subject matter, the unauthorized disclosure of which might be detrimental to the national security. You know, when we're fighting wars over selling, supposedly people having access to clean, inexpensive, safe energy would be a threat to our national security. So this is fairly Orwellian, obviously. And you are ordered in no wise to publish or disclose the invention or any material information with respect thereto. And it goes on to say, you know, you've got to tell them, you know, who you've been talking to, and you've got to give them all your files and all that kind of stuff. So it's a very onerous gag order that has been imposed on numerous, you know, people that I know.
So Foster, there's a Dutch Ruscaldo has a comment because he disagrees about the readiness because of this kind of thing, because of the powers that be.
Okay, great. Let's bring him in.
Can you?
Okay, Dutch, you're unmuted. Go ahead.
It looks like he's still muted. Okay. Oh, there he is. Great.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
No, you are. Go ahead.
Okay. First, I want to say peace be with you, Forrester, Kimberly, and the folks working there at Thrive, and all the folks participating.
Thank you.
I do disagree, because although mankind can greatly benefit from new technology, and not only in the free energy field, but medical and all other types of new innovation, the powers that be will not allow it at this point in time. And I think that's been shown, and I think, Foster, you have given us some examples.
Yes.
I know that in the field of medicine, there have been Dr. Raymond Royal Rife.
Yes.
Max Gerson. They've all, they, in essence, have cured cancer and, gosh, most any other degenerative diseases. But they have been shut down by the American Medical Association, which is funded by the Rockefellers.
Sure.
And this, this kind of situation exists and is going to continue to exist unless something is done about the powers to be. So although this new technology is quite breakthrough, and I'm glad you mentioned Nassim Haramein, I'm a big fan of his, I think we have to have some sort of control take away the power from the people that are responsible for not allowing all this innovation into the public.
Foss,
do you want to address that?
Sure. Well, it's a really important point. You're right that we are in a basically kind of a covert police state at the moment, where people who try to bring these things out can get in trouble. A couple of things that I would say about it is, if you've seen the documentary Who Killed the Electric Car, you know that the same powers that be basically killed the electric car when it first came out back in the 70s. And, here we are 40 years later. And Obama himself just gave a talk yesterday about his goal of having 1 million electric cars on the road by the end of 2015 or something like that. So the times do change even amongst the powers that be, especially when it gets to where they can participate in the profits and when they can no longer stop the progress. And I really recommend both strategies. That I think that as we go to these new energy technologies, as the old ones become obsolete, then the major corporations who already have big infrastructures are going to want to participate. They just need to not be allowed to come in and violate people in order to participate. They'll need to buy their way in, and if they do it responsibly, they can have a portion of it, but not to be able to dominate anymore. And the last event that we did last month on financial liberation, we talked a lot about the big financial changes that are going on around the world. And I think the potential imminent collapse, not only of the stock market, but of the Federal Reserve System itself. And with the Federal Reserve System collapsing, the fundamental power of those of the Rockefeller Rothschild cartel that is behind oil as well as agriculture and medicine and education and so forth, a lot of that will be mitigated or disappearing. And I have high hopes that the BRICS countries and this new asset-backed global financial approach will add a lot more integrity. It won't take it all the way and it won't do it quickly, but will add a lot more integrity to the global situation, where people will be able to bring out these breakthroughs much more easily in the future. So it's going to be messy. It's going to be all these different things need to go hand in hand. But I don't think we need to wait until we have stopped the banking cabal before we get technologies out. Because, and that's why we so So encourage the open source option, because if someone can be in a situation where they can simply put working plans on the internet, then that can't be stopped. It'll be downloaded by hundreds of thousands of people before it can be stopped. And then if people are building them all over the world, they won't be able to put that genie back in the bottle. So they'll turn on a dime and they'll go after their piece of the action, but they won't be able to stop it anymore.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the financial system.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The only thing that that I worry about in connection with this is, are these powers that be giving a little bit in this area, in that area, as a bit of subterfuge to take our attention away from we got to keep our eye on the ball.
Yeah.
And that is that they are the biggest problem for mankind at this point in time, unless, you know, the ETs come through with something, as David Wilcock believes. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right in that we have to keep submitting some of the new technology. And in a sense, that's really keeping pressure on these people we are not done by any means. We are going to get there. And I just hope it can be done peaceably.
Yes.
But we'll see.
Well, thank you very much.
I'm with you on that.
Let's talk for a moment about open source, because I think, you know, one of the things I like to think about is how to get the toothpaste out of the tube in a way that it just can't get put back. And I feel like there's an opportunity to, you know, I believe that this whole process of transformation and revolution is a messy process. And there are a lot of good questions, by the way. So Christos and Spiri and various people will be bringing these up. But I think it's valuable to be thinking about the different models, because for me in particular, a lot of my hope comes from open source. And we have some two team members here in addition to Foster who have some experience with that. And to me, it's just so inspiring and exciting. I think it might be fun to introduce that here, because it's the messiness of an alive, interactive human resilience that makes a lot of things possible. All right.
Yeah, let me give a little overview of that, and then I would love to have Goa and Rob chime in on the open source aspect, because they're way more familiar with it than I am. So I put a slide up of a spectrum of business models that we have encountered or co-created with various inventors. And as I mentioned before, they run from pure giveaway. Somebody's finally got it, and they just want to. They're just philanthropic and they just want to give it to the world. So they just put it up on the internet and then everybody has it, and that's great. Another possibility is number two there is giveaway with philanthropic compensation. That's the one that I mentioned before. If somebody's got it and they say, listen, I spent my life on this, I've taken a lot of risks, so I need to be compensated. You know, my number is $30 million or something like that. And if there are the funds available to just compensate that person, and that money goes into escrow, their plans go into escrow, and simultaneously they get the money and those plans go up on the internet. It's not the same as, you know, a lot of inventors that thought they got their payday when General Motors or GE or somebody comes in and says, hey, I'll give you millions of dollars for that technology. And they go, great. And they actually get their money in some cases. But then the major corporation turns around and puts it on the shelf and doesn't give it to the world because of their own financial agenda. So that's kind of a new plan for how people can get those things out and be compensated. The next one that I'll ask Goa to address shortly is open source. In other words, you reveal how it's done, but side by side with that are various sales or licensing strategies to compensate the inventor, to sustain businesses as they go forward, but not bottleneck the actual knowledge of how it's done. Another is to go for public patents where you reveal it into the public domain so that no corporation can basically steal it or hoard the knowledge. Another is partial patents. I know some inventors with amazing technologies who have patented simply key parts that they have developed. And those parts could be used for various things. So they deserve either design or use patents, but they're not giving away the one application, which would be in an over Unity Energy technology, for instance. And another possibility is to get a patent in a foreign country that is more amenable to letting these technologies come out than in the U.S. And then we've also been approached by funders who want so much to fund these technologies that they want to see these inventors fully funded, and there in any return that comes back on the investment from these philanthropists will not go back to them personally, but will be recycled into further development of the technologies or for the distribution of those technologies, especially to third world countries who would be kind of last in line to be able to actually buy them as they come out. And then the last two, one is I've run across several very aware, savvy business people who have created what I refer to as conscious venture capital companies and are working quite successfully with some of the best inventors that I've seen. And they're encouraging collaboration amongst the inventors. The inventors are owning a piece of the venture capital company itself so that they're not, you know, all competing with each other or, you know, trying to just be the one that succeeds. They're all encouraging each other being successful because they'll all mutually benefit from the proceeds. And then in the far extreme is traditional venture capital, which I personally don't recommend to any real disruptive or, you know, breakthrough inventors at this point, because they're just mostly too co-opted, and there's a tendency, if you don't move fast enough, they're looking for the 1 in 10 success. So if you're doing great, but you're number three, they can dump you into their garbage and you lose your project, which they've taken over because you weren't as profitable as early as some of the other projects. But that being said, the biggest venture capital company in Silicon Valley, Kleiner Perkins, put almost $1 billion recently into what's called the Bloom Box, B-L-O-O-M, which is not an over Unity device, but it's a biogas off-grid technology. And there are a number of companies like, I think, eBay and maybe Google and some of the others in Silicon Valley that are actually running their big office buildings off of this technology, where you can take one kind of shoebox size box and then multiply it to where it's the size of a pickup truck or something like that, and then put that thing out behind the building and run the entire building off of it. And that's already happening. And the fact that's happening through major venture capital, traditional investors, and major corporate consumers, makes us all one step closer to having off-the-grid energy technologies be acceptable to the mainstream. So that's kind of the overview of various plans that seem different, have different fits for different inventors. But Go, I would invite you to come in and talk a little bit about your experience with open source technologies and some of the different plans that could be successful as well as profitable to early investors and so forth in that domain.
Sure. Thanks, Foster. So, the first, I think, most common misconception about open source is that you just kind of have to give it away and you've relinquished your rights or privilege or even opportunity for, income from that. And, really is not that at all. It's not necessarily a business model per se to do open source, but it's really a business strategy or a tactic. So let me drop in a couple of quick links in the chat that have a few articles about this. One's from the Harvard Business Review and one's from Open Health News. And the one with Open Health News is actually quite interesting because it goes into 15 or 20 different distinct and the most common types of licensing strategies that you can use for open source. And they really range, I'm not going to go through them all, but they're, the most simple are something like a dual license where you give it away for free to the user, but anyone that wants to use it in a commercial application, needs to license it from the proprietor. And Rob, I think, can speak more about that because he actually has done that himself. We did the same type of strategy for the toolkit that we developed for the Thrive Visual Effects. We open sourced that last year in the same kind of a dual license scenario. But you know, the real heart of open source and the piece that so that makes it so valuable is that you push a lot of very expensive aspects out towards the community. You know, it can be a really expensive endeavor to do Q&A on a product or a service or a piece of software. But when you know you don't have to hire 100 people, but you know 1,000 people out in the community can do that independently and still have that feedback loop, it really can race development along. It also proves, invests, and improves the technology as you go. It you know closes up security holes. You know, the securities aspect is another important one because, you know, from a certain perspective, commercial companies are disincentivized to actually, you know, be really tight with their security and, you know, reveal that they have holes or anything like that. Whereas in an open source paradigm, where you've got a community of people that are out there really trying to tear it down and make sure it's totally bulletproof and, you know, holds its water, those types of projects actually stack up much higher from a security and safety perspective than many similar commercial products. So I think that's important to note. Most people that are familiar with open source projects are usually on the software side because that's really where it's been developed and most popularized. I think Linux, the operating system of Linux, is a great example of that. And it's also a great example of where people are selling add-on services or you know, different types of services, be it you know, upgrades or add-ons, like I mentioned, or even just customer support, you know, technical support for something like that. That's an add-on service. While they're still giving away the core software as an open source package, Red Hat is an example of that for Linux. But hardware really isn't excluded. There's some fantastic open source hardware projects. Arduino is one of my favorite examples that's really leveraged the proliferation of and the expansion of 3D printing in the last several years. And also many of you may also know of Tesla Motors, kind of did a quasi open source. They told everyone that they're not going to enforce any infringements on their patents. So they've kind of open sourced their patents and said, okay, we're not going to, you know, go ahead and use them and we won't sue you for it. So it's, I think it's an excellent move in the right direction, but it wasn't quite a full on open source kind of a thing. There's one other link I want to drop into the chat, which is the a new book by a fellow named Robert David Steele. And the book is called Open Source Everything. And I just actually am starting this book. I haven't finished it yet, but it is some really popular ideas about, you know, the theory of open source and really the benefit that can be had by open sourcing literally everything. So I think that's pretty good for now. Foster or Rob, did you want to add anything else?
Rob, I would love for you to comment on some of the open source strategies that you've been involved in.
Sure. I did build a successful business that I've had for the more than 10 years now, where I have been dual licensing software that I've written as both open source and commercially licensable. And it was interesting, we talked a little bit about open source and how it's worked in the software world, which is really where it started, this whole idea of free software and open source software. And there's been a lot of discussion about this, and it's kind of a proven model, at least in the software world. And what's interesting that here to this discussion is that software is really talking about copyrights. There are software patents. It's kind of a controversial issue. But at least as the term open source is usually used, it's usually applied to copyright. And the idea is that you own the copyright, so you can use that to your advantage. You can say, because I own the copyright, I can make this freely available to people, but I can also, I still retain the copyright, and I can set the terms for allowing other people to use the software. So typically, what the most common term is that if I make this publicly available and I share it with you, you have the right to use it, but you also have to keep it open so that when you share it, people continue to get that benefit.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting looking at the patent situation. We're talking about new energy technologies that are inventions that are really more covered by patents. And I think I'm not really sure exactly how open source would apply to that, because patents and open source are almost at odds with each other. With a patent, you have this idea that you're able to, or you share how something works, you make that public. In exchange for that, you get essentially the right to exclude other people from creating or recreating that. And with open source, it's kind of the opposite. You really want to share to enable anyone to do that. So how do you place restrictions on it? And that's kind of the challenge, I think, looking at open source and patents. But since patents are kind of with the, what you just mentioned, Foster, about patents being seized, so patents are really not a good idea to try to pursue in this case anyway. So the challenge is, how do we create new business models that allow us to share this, but still kind of be sustainable?
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of different ways I think we could look at how open source has worked in the software world and try to apply that to patents. The dual licensing is kind of difficult, I think, to recreate, because there's no patent to rely on to exclude people.
Right.
But there are other ways, I think, that, for example, the add-on business model, or maybe doing something with trade secrets,
right,
or a lot of other possibilities. So that's the challenge that I see.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you. I'd love to hear from people like you and Goa who've actually done this in the real world, not with free energy yet, but with visual effects developments and with software, because it helps to inform us. And you can see why my favorite plan is, if there's somebody who's got a ton of money and they care more about actually having a thriving world, if they're willing to simply pay off, literally to give that money to an inventor to put it out completely open source, I think that's going to be the big breakthrough. But I think many of these plans will come forward simultaneously.
And I,
can I share a little bit about the 3D printing and the patents?
Yeah, I do that. I love it.
I was just sharing that with Foster yesterday. Most people, everybody knows about 3D printing now. And really, that's been in the last maybe 4 years, stretching it, maybe five at the most. The people have really started to expand their awareness around the whole 3D printing phenomena. But
I think Kish could still give a super quick little definition of what it is, in case there's anybody who isn't familiar.
Okay. Well, 3D printing is essentially a way to take a digital file and make it into a physical object. And so I've got a few examples of that. Here's something that we generated with the toolkit that we devised or designed for the film Thrive. So the form is actually made in software, and then this model is digitally sliced into hundreds of thousands of tiny little layers. And then 3D printing is also called additive manufacturing, and what it does is it uses a printhead to lay down one tiny layer at a time on top of the next. And so what you get at the end is a physical model of your digital design. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. But what I think is really interesting of why it's really become so popular in the last few years is because the patents expired. Most people think, oh, this is a brand new phenomenon, but I've been tracking 3D printing, literally for 15 years. The patents just expired, and those are 20 to 25 years. So it's really been around for over a quarter of a decade. And it's because the patents expired and the leverage the convergence of other open source technologies that really have enabled this huge proliferation of 3D printing now.
Yeah,
and now there are probably dozens of different 3D printers that are also part of an open source model. So.
And 3D printers can print 3D printers. So when you think in terms of the ramifications, I mean, many of the comments and questions have to do with, how can we go up against the powers that be, everything from a new paradigm that's suppressed as well as the actual technology. And I really think that this is the answer to that in many ways, as many models as there are. I think that these innovations, the resilience and innovation of humanity cannot be stopped. And with the internet and with the communication, it's sparked and nurtured all over the place. And so when somebody comes up with a way to do this, you think about, so someone wants to know, do you need an existing grid? No. You can interface with an existing grid, but you can also have an independent device. And so that opens up maybe what's needed. For example, if we had to ship all this stuff, you'd have to go through the laws and regulations of every jurisdiction that you're shipping through. With 3D printing, there are ways to get things out, print more printers, print those parts, develop a device, which then you come up with all kinds of things within that little village for the water purification, the electricity, and any number of other things, including the health technology. So I'm personally not a big believer in legislative assistance or convincing the powers that be. I'm into obsoleting them. And I really think that that's what these technologies and innovations represent. And I think that's why, you know, just that wanting to pay tribute to the fact that it's so easy to be overwhelmed and to feel like, look, they own the media, they've got, you know, everybody sick and dumbed down, and it's just all this stuff coming at us, and to watch the level of risk and brilliance that people continue to bring to the fore. And I think, you know, I've said before, I think it's the reason that Foster and I and our team get to be so sort of unusually optimistic. It's because we're exposed to this. And that's my hope. It isn't that there aren't, you know, the most sinister agendas going on. It's that they can't stop human creativity. And there are fabulous hackers out here to help us all stay connected and the rest. So it's a lot of this kind of stuff. And to me, learning about 3D printing and the ramifications for that in terms of global dissemination of these new energy technologies, I think is fantastic, because one of the things that we run into is how to have somebody, you know, want to fund these when it doesn't mean that your money's going to buy your way into the lab, right? It would be very easy to be corrupted and taken over if anyone who showed up with money could just then learn everything about how this is done if it isn't open source. So there's tricky stuff involved in all of it. And so to me, that's where the open source and the 3D stuff opens it up the fastest and the widest and gets, like I've always said, the toothpaste out of the tube. Because if anyone's ever tried to put toothpaste back in the tube, you can know that you can't.
Let's take a moment to ask the group for some feedback. We've got a mechanism in this WebEx technology that allows people to do that. So why don't you point out to them where they can open up that mechanism, and then I'll ask a question.
Sure. So the icon that you're looking for is in the bottom part of the participants panel, and it's a little comic bubble with a check mark in it. And if you click on it, you've got options to give feedback, either yes, no, too fast, too slow, a pause, or laughter. So that's where you click to set your feedback.
And as you're finding that, what I would love to get your feedback on is, amongst this group, do you think that the shadow government, the black ops projects, the ones we're not allowed to hear about, do you think that they already have free energy technology? So just click yes or no, or applause or laughter. No, just yes or no.
And you can actually adjust your feedback if you want to change it, so you know.
And then, yeah, check on the bottom where it says check feedback results, and you'll see what's happening with that. Well, I think we have a very savvy group here. Okay, I think we've got the impression here. Okay, let's open up to another question.
There are additional questions about specific kinds of technology, so I want to get to some of those. How about we have Shannon Weckman and then John Ross after that, maybe?
Okay, Shannon, I've unmuted you. Go ahead.
I submitted a couple of questions. Of course, one of them was answered about the SMI,
okay.
You know, thing. And I guess both my questions were answered.
Okay, great. Well,
and the other one had to do with, you know, the Rockefellers buying their way into the technology and dominating it again.
Yeah. Well, we certainly have to be careful about that. But I'll tell you, every inventor that I've ever visited is well aware of the banking cartel's domination and their agenda. So we're just much more savvy than we used to be. But they, in addition, that's why these inventors need to have the money, not only for their development, but for their security, for legal protection and all of that, before we try to actually bring them out.
Right. And I'm also making an investment in SMI, and I'm hoping that's a good decision.
I think it's an excellent decision, and thank you for doing that.
Yeah, great.
I'm happy.
Okay, how about John?
Thanks, Shannon.
Thank you. How about John Ross? Question.
John Ross. Not seeing him in the list.
Okay. Hmm.
Why didn't somebody read the question?
Yeah, is it possible for someone to talk about hydrogen technologies, i.e. producing hydrogen from wind power, bottling it at low pressure, and using it for home heating and small engines and stuff?
Well, I certainly am not an expert in that. I have been involved with a couple of labs that have been doing hydrogen technologies, and most of them, frankly, have abandoned it. One, because the automobile companies are spending billions on it already, and two, because it's a fairly expensive process to split water into hydrogen and oxygen, which is the usual way of accessing the hydrogen. And then, as I'm sure you know, there are risks involved in storing the hydrogen and burning the hydrogen that simply aren't there in other safer technologies. So you probably know more about it than I do. I welcome any input that you have on it.
How that person hasn't shown up here. So how about Michael Spies?
Okay. Michael, I've unmuted you. Go ahead. Is Michael with us? Hello, Michael.
He said, this is back on open source, and given that it's one of the ones that I've such high hopes about, I'm going to take this. It says, there are a lot of open source projects. If I want to support a project, how can I be sure that it isn't a scam? And how can I be sure that the projects supported by me later will be made available to the general public?
I think maybe he's referring more to Indiegogo and Kickstarter type of crowdfunding projects, mm-hmm. that aspect of open source. Goa, do you want to comment on that? I know you've got a lot of familiarity with those type of projects.
I'm not sure what to say, although, you know, vetting the technologies is really, you know, the most critical part of any kind of investment. You know, generally with open source projects, you know, you have the ability to actually check something of the proprietary information out yourself and replicate it if you've got the skills, you know, or the engineering or coding talent to do so. So that, you know, doing that kind of due diligence is actually much easier to do in an open source kind of an environment than a closed source piece, because actually getting the proprietary information is the hard part, you know, unless you put up some money. But with regard to crowdfunding, that's actually something I'm kind of tracking myself in that, you know, I haven't done a lot of investing into crowdfunding projects, you know, or essentially what those are pre-selling, you know, a product that's going to come out in the future. But I have heard a few stories about, you know, certain technologies that, you know, a bunch of crowdfunding people came in, they met their target, but for some reason the project failed and never came off the ground. So I think that's, you know, definitely something to look for. And, you know, potentially another aspect of your due diligence is looking at the people and look at their track record of other technologies. But, you know, that it's not to say that that's very common. I think that's more the exception to the rule. I've heard of many more examples of really innovative things that really could not have gotten off the ground other than a crowdfunding kind of a way. And they've definitely gone out and built and even gotten larger than they ever dreamed of. You know, trying to raise a couple, you know, $20,000 or $30,000, and I've seen examples of that raising over $1 million. So, you know, huge, you know, out of the park wins for things like that.
Yeah, I think it also brings up one of the reasons why a lot of potential investors have been approaching Thrive, because we've been into this for a long time. I've been in this field for 15 years, and you know, built a lot of trust with different inventors. So I've been into labs that most people don't get into, because money doesn't buy your way into these labs. You have to have really an established reputation of trustworthiness. And also because most people don't have the time or the expertise to do the vetting themselves. And that is something that we care a lot about. And so we have developed teams, consulting teams. One team of, you know, engineers and physicists that we take to various labs to vet things. And then we also have health practitioners who vet some of the health projects. We've got security specialists who help to analyze that part of it. And as well as I mentioned before, business consulting, legal consulting, that type of thing. So if you don't have the expertise or the funding to do it yourself, then, you know, try to find an organization who is already doing that and get them interested in the project that you want to check out.
I think, so Brent Anderson has a question, and it also about GDS technology, but I think we can go from that into the criteria that we use in vetting the project, so that you understand that the top 70 projects, what do they have in common, and what is the state of readiness. And it's true that we're approached by folks with money, as Foster said, some that we wouldn't want to work with. You can just tell that it's not the right consciousness behind it, and none that's enough at this stage to get anything over the top. So it's tricky to do. And again, that's why we're, you know, the notions of crowdfunding, open source, and how to piece these things together is of great interest. Anyway, Brent, can you come on?
So Brent, go ahead. You're unmuted. Can you hear us, Brent?
I think people are having trouble, like John Ross said, he had trouble getting his himself unmuted. Is there anything you can do on your end, Goa, or is it?
They're unmuted at the moment. I'm not sure what's going on with the audio feed.
Okay. How about
Tom? Let me go ahead and address what you were saying, Kimberly, while we're looking at other questions. I'm going to start. I'm going to show a couple of slides here. Kimberly has referred to the Thrive Connect, and like many things in Thrive, we have that organized according to our 12-sector wheel that we've developed with Barbara Marks Hubbard and the SHIFT project and many other groups who are now all using this similar template. And it helps to coordinate activities with lots of different movements and projects worldwide. So this is just a kind of a snapshot of some of the projects that we're working with in the different sectors. And you can see the one that has the most is in infrastructure, because that's where most of the technology projects go. So these are the criteria that Kimberly was mentioning, because there are just countless worthwhile projects all over the world. But we need to stay focused on something. And what we want to stay focused on is projects that will change the world the fastest and that and in the most whole systems, healthy, thriving way. So these are the main criteria that we've developed. The first is that the breakthrough, whether it's health, economics, technology, whatever, that they be based on the recognition of wholeness, as I mentioned before. So the wholeness of an ecosystem, the wholeness of food, the wholeness of an approach to healing and so forth. The second is that it's scalable to a global reach, because most people are working on very local projects. They're working on them in their garage or in their office or in their home or their local community or something like that. And that's fantastic. But if they really have a breakthrough that in principles and a breakthrough for humanity, then we want to see that that can be scalable to global reach. And in the case of technology, that simply means that the technology can be replicated all over the world. And 3D printing helps a lot with that. But if it's a project like the Reverence Wellness Salon that Kimberly mentioned before of Akilah Shirills in Watts, if they develop a model center there and they video record the process, you know, the trial and error, the learning process of creating that, and then when it's ready, then broadcast that on YouTube or on the, you know, Thrive TV or whatever around the world, then any community can learn how to do it and replicate it all over the world. So all of a sudden, what was developed in a single community spreads very rapidly. The next one is clear evidence of existing commitment. So there's a lot of people out there, you know, sitting on the couch dreaming, if only if I had $1 million, I know I would have some great ideas. Well, that's fine. But that's not who is top in our queue. The people that we're working with are already doing it. And most of them are doing it on a shoestring. But one way or another, they've got such a deep commitment to what they're doing that they're already in some form or other manifesting the project or the technology or whatever. And in the process of doing that, number four, they've established a reputation of integrity and effectiveness. And then finally, that their project needs to be congruent with the Thrive three-stage transition strategy toward a truly free and thriving world. And in a nutshell, what that boils down to is their project can't be creating any new violations. It needs to be aligned with the shrinking of old violations such as taxation in transition down to where ultimately nobody's stealing each other's money. Under any excuse, and that the principles of integrity and non-violation are core to what they're doing. So these may seem very simple for most of you. I think it's probably already the mode in which you operate. This has helped to filter out a fair number of projects who want to, you know, raise more taxes to go out and be able to tell people what to do according to their particular ideology. Or whatever, or people who have been doing things, but their reputation for integrity is just not solid, or they've tried a number of things, but haven't shown that they can actually stick with something and manifest it. So I encourage you to consider this for your own projects, but also consider it for the people that you're talking to and suggest that they align with these in general, much less if they want to be a part of Thrive Connect.
Great. How about if we bring up Tom Compton, and then also I want to review, I know we had a clip that we thought about playing from Bearden, but that's interesting about suppression. I don't know if there are other things that we specifically wanted to cover that we can think of. But Tom Compton, you want to be unmuted and ask your question?
Hi. Yeah. Well, I put up two questions. One was I'm just curious about, I think you've already been talking about it, but, you know, overcoming the media with, you know, they just label something as quackery or conspiracy. And it, you know, supports the suppression of information. And, you know, especially the new paradigm that you mentioned about, you know, that example of you plug in 10 hair dryers and as soon as there's a need, there's support, and all these, a lot of these innovations are pointing out that that is the truth about how the universe is designed. So that was one question, and then the other was just a, just specific cancer innovations that you know of that that you've already vetted that they should, you know, have proven that they work, and how I might get that information. So those are my two questions.
I'll address the media for a moment, and Kimberly, you'll probably be more versed in the cancer approaches. But in relation to the media, yes, what you're saying is true, that it's hard to get mainstream media attention for a true breakthrough in energy technologies because the same people who own the oil companies, or who at least control the oil companies, also control the media. I must say that both Go and I were thrilled to see that on the network show Shark Tank, where people bring in startup projects and try to get them funded by some entrepreneurs and investors, one team came on with what they claimed to be a free energy device. And I'll tell you, the sharks, the investors, were all over it. I haven't followed the progress of it to see what happened with that, but I think that might have been a little crack of light in that particular challenge.
Yeah.
And also, we have seen it revealed that most young people do not rely on mainstream network news for their news.
Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't mean that they're all plugged into fabulous, you know, different opinions that force them to do a lot of critical thinking. But it does mean that they're not relying on that, and that information is moving faster. And I have to say, my experience is that people sense that they're not being told the truth, and that there's another picture, and that they're looking for it. And sometimes I think that, I mean, just that we can document these, you know, 27 million views. I mean, that means if each DVD and each viewing were one person. So, you know, it's more than that. And you know, it's satisfying, of course, to make something that people respond to. But I really think it represents something, that a two-hour documentary, you know, that everybody says, oh, no, I'll sit down for 2 hours. It's like people do sit down for 2 hours and they get themselves informed and they talk to other people. And so as much as the media is, you know, lying, I personally use mainstream media to help me figure out what they want me to think, because yeah, that's very instrumental. It actually helps me to go, okay, why would they want me to think this? What else could be happening? And then I expose myself to other news, and I see more and more people doing that. And that kind of leads to the cancer thing, which is that I do believe that people are opening to other possibilities than what traditional cancer machinery is, you know, the oncologists are telling them, because they're either it's not working, or because this whole healthcare fiasco in this country and around the world is such that I think that most people recognize that their well-being is not primary in what's being considered. That it's just loud and clear that that's the case. And so if that's the case with regard to health insurance and all the rest, then how is it with regard to their health care? So, of course, often people come to the alternative treatments after they've done so much other treatment that's done a lot of damage that it can be problematic. But my own belief is that we each respond differently to different things. You know, it's like, what vitamins do you need, and which ones do I need, or do we need any, or whatever. That varies from person to person, and I think that's true of the treatments, too. I was very impressed. I'm personally very impressed with Brzezinski's work. I mentioned the documentary just called Brzezinski from 2010. We posted the link in the chat section here to his website. I think his neoplasty and stuff is very interesting, and depending for sure if I had a brain tumor or prostate cancer, those seem to be the ones where he's especially good. There's also something I've mentioned before, the GCMAF, it's GCMAF.eu, that is a technique that really works at restoring our intestinal health, which, you know, the widespread use of antibiotics seems to be, you know, having way more negative consequences than people once suspected. So thick math, and then a combination of therapies, but and then the Gerson therapy and the Rife technology, which I don't believe has been replicated the way, you know, Rife had it, although one of the people in our art department who made the poster for Thrive, his sister used, had access to the modified Rife technology. Maybe you can talk more about that, Foster, where that one's at right now. But
yeah, anyway, let me just mention really quickly on that one that also there, one of the projects in Thrive Connect, I don't want to mention it specifically yet, but an amazingly brilliant healer and doctor or scientist that we've known for a while was approached recently by Royal Rife's original engineer, the guy who helped him build both the microscope and his, I can't remember the name of the device, but the device that would actually send the frequencies into the body, has been underground for a long time and waiting to find the right person. And he approached this friend of ours because I believe he is the right person with his knowledge and his integrity and so forth, and offered, and this gentleman is understandably, you know, quite old, and what he wants to do with the rest of his life is coach this doctor on how to recreate the actual original technology and frequencies to bring back that cancer cure. So they have gotten some interim funding. They need more, and they're super high on our list. And I would also add in one more. Again, I don't want to name the person yet because they have been so successful in curing cancer and other viruses. They spent 10 years coming up with a technique that they were so excited about that they ended up doing some studies at a major health clinic in Southern California to validate what they were doing. And the results were so profound that the Rockefeller-controlled AMA came in and shut down the studies. The clinic now denies having worked with this person or endorsed them in any way, even though there's a complete paper trail of their endorsement, the results of the studies, of all of that. And then this gentleman was approaching his car. Fortunately, he had a dog who smelled something bad about the car and pulled him away from his car as the car blew up in the parking lot. So somebody was trying to kill him, at which point he needed to leave the country. And the clinic would not give him back his cultures that he had grown that were being so successful. So understandably, this guy is being very careful, and he's you know, right up there at the top of the list of the people that could so quickly empower the world when he gets the money that he likes. So and the one last one I would add in was there's this Italian doctor, Tullio Simoncini, who approaches cancer as a fungus, who has been very successful in treating various types of cancer with calcium carbonate, basically. So I recommend all of those, and we want to see all of those funded and protected, and you know, bringing those technologies safely out.
And also medical cannabis and that, yes, and its work with other of these cures. But I think they all take looking into, you know, we can put these links in the chat window, and we've done various blogs.
And like the Italian doctor with the sodium bicarbonate, and like, so you know that he's successfully treated? Like, is that something you've already investigated?
I haven't been to Italy to vet him. I'm depending on interviews that I've seen with people who tend to be pretty reputable, and they're checking things out. But I can't vouch for it personally.
Okay.
And part of these, so just so you know, our status is a lot of this was done, you know, we've done a preliminary vetting to call the top 70. Yeah. And we need the funding in order to move forward, because flying these expert teams around safely and doing all the security and all that takes a bunch of money. So
it's amazing.
So what we've done is everything that we can do. You know, we're a good Thrive Connect model. Like, we're clearly committed, and we're not waiting for the funding to do it. And at the same time, we're doing all that we can to get that funding. I want to say thank you for that. And
thanks, Tom.
Please.
Oh my God. Thank you guys for being so committed.
Yeah. And also, you know, use the space in our Thrive Together forum there to be communicating and sharing these links back and forth with each other. Someone asked if we would be emailing the links. We will have them posted in the chat window, which is available in the archived version of this, which is available to you. You can go back through the chat window and get them all. Maybe we can take them out and also just post them on the event page of relevant links from this particular event. And then I want to say another thing, which is we're having our next event is going to be on January 17th, and it's going to be at 10 in the morning, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time till noon, which is better for our European caller, you know, people who are joining. And it's going to be, it's called ETs Among Us, Who, How, and Why. And we're going to have Richard Dolan join us, and we'll post a link to his book and more about him if you don't know. Fabulous person in the field of understanding ET and UFO phenomenon. Very, you know.
He's literally written the most respected history of the whole ET UFO field in the military and government and so forth, as well as its suppression. And he's got a new book called UFOs for the 21st Century Mind that really just lays out all the evidence and makes it all very user-friendly. And he's very grounded, down to earth about all this. So he'll be joining us for the full 2 hours, making a presentation and then being available for Q&A.
Yeah.
And that ties in, of course, with our topic today, with the breakthrough innovations, because a lot of people say, well, I don't believe this free energy stuff is real. You know, I think it's probably just a hoax. But you know, and until we can prove it in 3D, I honor that opinion. But if somebody does some research, the evidence is so compelling that, number one, all of these successful labs are being raided. And I don't think the FBI would bother with a bunch of hoaxers. So they know the real thing when they see it and try to shut it down. So that's some confirmation. And secondly, with, you know, Stephen Greer alone has over 500 interviews with top level government, military, and FAA officials acknowledging their firsthand experience of UFOs or actual ETs. And if that's true, if we're being visited now by one, much less multiple species, and we have been potentially for thousands of years, and there's a lot of evidence of that, well, they didn't get here most likely by burning Exxon along the way. So they're somehow accessing energy anywhere in the universe, and especially in a way that alters time and space, in a way that you're not spending hundreds of thousands of years traveling from the nearest star. So as Adam Trombley said in our movie, you know, the suppression of free energy and the suppression of the ET UFO phenomenon go hand in hand. So we'll be segueing into that topic next week.
So there's two more questions.
No, I'm sorry, not next week, in the next event. This will be on January 17th.
Yeah, at 10 a.m. we'll tell you about that. We did create a gifting coupon, so if there's somebody in your world that you think would be really interested in this experience, you could turn them on to that through this gifting coupon that we have at the Thrive Together portal. But the two people, Melanie Rumble, if you want to come on, you had a question.
What was the name again?
Melanie Rumble.
Oh, there it is. Actually, her audio is not connected.
Okay.
I don't have a way to mute or unmute, Melanie.
Okay. Her question is, do you have a few top alternative news sources that you'd like to recommend?
Wow. there are so many of them. I think what I would prefer to do is compile a list of that. An up-to-date list, so I'm not leaving out any key ones or just naming a few. And I will put that in the subscriber portal in the comment thread there. It's a super important question. Thanks for asking it, and I'll do that.
Great. And then last, a quick, Sperry Andrews has lots, so we're going to have to narrow. I know you wanted to know about Stephen Greer and that his work with the Breakthrough Technologies also. So just in the last minute, Barry, can you come on and ask your question?
Yes, thank you, Kimberly. Mm-hmm. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Yes, I just had a question that nature has been has created us, and we are a breakthrough device, if you will, and we've been invented by nature and been improving over the course of evolution to handle our current circumstances. And as a scientist of human consciousness for the last 30 plus years, I've been exploring how people can access a commonly sensed intelligence. And I feel that that's very vital to succeeding in all these areas, because as more of us are awake together as one body, heart, and mind, we're going to be able to influence through the radiance of our coherence as a collective consciousness and affect those people that feel the only way to go about things is to be in service to themselves. So the preponderance of unity consciousness, which is very accessible, very reliable and readily accessible, has been demonstrated with scientists that I brought together internationally with neuroscientific brain research laboratories to demonstrate that we are indivisible on instrument, a state-of-the-art instrumentation under double-blind conditions in a very compelling way to help also with films to shift theater audiences into unity consciousness so we can popularize access, direct access to this common sense, which all leaders in the past have called to their followers to say, please, people, just use your common sense. And if people have access to a commonly sensed intelligence, it's a type of almost literally telepathic or somatic intelligence that is experientially based. It's not in the head. It's where instead of us being navigating by who we think we are and what we think we're doing, instead we're able to sense and feel together as a single body, heart, and mind. And then the mind, the thinking, verbal, analytic brain, left brain, is allowed to point at the experience, and that induces it interpersonally, intersubjectively, whether it's one person doing it by themselves or groups or the whole species. So, and I also wanted to mention that I have a funding instrument with a number of banks in Europe that I would love to discuss, but we really can't discuss that openly here without going through an NDA. But it is extremely excellent way to go about funding these various projects and protecting the investment monies of investors at the same time.
Why don't you write to us at info@thrivemovement.com about that, and then we can follow up.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. So thanks for bringing that up, Sperry. The realization that we are all breakthrough innovations is really central. We're actually free energy devices. We're not plugged in anything. We're toroidal devices connected with the entire world, and it's an example of the infinite energy that the devices are tapping, because it's the same thing that we're tapping. And the more labs we visit, the more we realize that, first of all, most of the inventors ultimately end up acknowledging guidance from interdimensional beings, ETs, higher intelligence of some sort, you know, from the field that they've learned to open to. And also we're noticing that many of these devices are accessing more etheric energy at a different frequency level than just the usual electromagnetic field. And it oftentimes really matters how people are behaving around the devices. That being harmonious amongst people really helps being in harmonious relationship with the devices. So thank you for that. And I know we're coming up on the time to close here, but a lot of people have been asking on the subscriber portal as well as as on the Q&A here about the most kind of commonly talked about devices. So I just want to cover them, you know, in 1 minute. And that's Keshi, Rossi, the QEG, and Blacklight Power.
Sperry had one too. Was it with the Orion stuff? Was that your other?
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah,
I don't know whether you were working with, it sounds like you are working with Stephen Greer.
We don't have any kind of formal partnership with him. I admire tremendously what he's looking to do with the Orion project. I don't think that they've been fully successful yet, but I, you know, I wish them complete success in doing that. A lot of people ask about the Keshe Foundation, and I hope sincerely that they have what they say they have. I think that Mr. Keshe himself is obviously a very educated, very bright guy. I've been a little disappointed so far by constant dates where demonstrations were promised of certain technologies, and then the dates came and went, and oftentimes conferences were held. I know one guy who flew over to Europe to film a particular demonstration. The demonstration didn't happen. He interviewed Keshe afterwards and couldn't get a clear answer even as to why not, much less whether or not he could demonstrate it. Now, I know that being from Iran, he gets hassled politically by the U.S. government. So I don't know what all is involved in yet. And basically, we're waiting to see solid vetting on clear technology demonstrations of that. So, and it's similar with the QEG. I like the approach that Hope Girl and the QEG project took to basically getting to a certain status, a certain level of progress in their development of the QEG, and then open sourcing all the plans before it was finished. That's going to make it a lot safer. I know there's over 90 groups around the world who are working on completing it. A lot of progress has been made, but as far as I know from Hope Girl's most recent report, it's not clearly demonstrable yet as a fully over Unity device. Then the Rossi ECAT device is probably the leader in publicly known cold fusion devices. For anyone who's interested in this, the recent edition of Infinite Energy Magazine, which is this one here that I'm holding up, the title of the magazine this time is Cold Fusion Mechanisms and Materials, and the lead article is Analysis of the ECAT Report. And the news, because a very in-depth analysis was done by several teams of the new version of the ECAT, and the report was very promising. One sentence says, we have to relate to the fact that the experimental results from our test show heat production beyond chemical burning and that the ECAT fuel undergoes nuclear transformation. It is most unsatisfying that these results so far have no convincing theoretical explanation, but the experimental results cannot be dismissed or ignored just because of lack of theoretical understanding. So that's hopeful that they could at least acknowledge that. There also seem to have been some shortcomings in this particular study than the details that are talked about and brought up in this particular article. And so, let's see, there was one more. Oh, yeah, Blacklight Power. Blacklight Power, with the work of Randall Mills, has supposedly also come up with very solid results recently. These are not technologies which our vetting team has gone to visit. We have been more working with behind-the-scenes technologies that are not in the public eye. I know Blacklight Power has had a lot of funding. They've got a tremendous amount of great scientists working on it. I have high hopes for them too, but I haven't seen the absolute confirmation yet of what they've got. So that's my quick summary. I know we're over time to wrap up. So I just want to say for myself that I just absolutely love this. To be able to be in touch with our network in such a live and interactive way, and we're getting the technology worked out at, you know, at least we could hear just about everybody this time, and we're working on each of us and you getting more familiar with the dashboard here so that we can see more and more of you in the future as we're interacting. But this, we're getting a great response to Thrive Together. So please continue to share it with your friends, because this is the kind of interaction where we can share with you, but also we want to learn from you. There's so many brilliant, innovative people in our network. And this is what people are mostly calling for, is to be in the live, in-process think tank as we go forward. So thanks for your participation, and we'll look forward to the next one in January. So Kimberly, you want to wrap up?
Yeah, I wanted to say I will pull the links that we've added to make them readily available to everybody to follow up on the things that we've discussed today, because they're fabulous resources that have been mentioned from people who've written in as well as that we had in our mind. So we'll put those in some coherent way together for you to easily access through the Thrive on the Thrive event page. So we'll have that. And, you know, I'll just say the thing that I think about from having been exposed to all this stuff is this notion of resistance-less flow, because it's so, like you were talking about, Spiri, I mean, it's the model for all of us. If we're the free energy devices, the less resistance that we have to what is as we move toward the infinite possibility that we know is also here amidst us. I think it's a really nice thing just to keep in our minds, this sort of physical image of what it is that we're really after spiritually and psychologically and interpersonally with each other. So I also love this. We like this way more than making blogs where we're just talking. We like the interacting with you. So thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you January 17th.
Let me just ask Goa, why, at the end here, why don't you just unmute us for everybody for a few seconds so everybody can say goodbye to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
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 Bye-bye.
See you there. Bye. Beautiful messages. Love, love, love.
Thank you.
Thank you.